Welcome into the Roto Lounge. It's your boy Brad Starks. It's rookie season. NFL draft is 2 weeks away, so I guess it's time for me to start talking about rookies. Better late than never. I'm going to talk about the three best players as far as wide receivers, as far as probably the entire draft, in my opinion, the three best players. I'm going to go ahead and do it in one episode, save you some time. We'll do it in one episode, knock everything out. But before we get into the rookie wide receivers, let's get into some bourbon. Let's get into our drinks. Get what you're drinking on. I'll be right back. I'll meet you on the flip side. All right, I'm back, and I'm trying something unique tonight. Let me go ahead and pop it and pour it. Championships. This is a bourbon from Total Wine, called Old Emmer, finest wheat bourbon. What I'll tell you right now is if you have a Total Wine near you, besides Kentucky, look up, go to the website, find the nearest one near you, look up Old Emmer. There's a regular version and there's a cast strength version. The reason you want to get these is a little conspiracy theory. It's made with emmer wheat, which is an old, ancient grain. Buffalo Trace released the Daniel Weller, which is a 12-year emmer wheat product. Retails for $500. Secondary is $2,500. Fun fact, there's only two distilleries that I can find online that actually distill emmer wheat bourbon. That is a Wyoming whiskey distillery, and that is Buffalo Trace Distillery. Total Wine, this is their brand. It's called Old Emmer. When you look on the back of the bottle, it says distilled in Kentucky. So a little conspiracy theory that this likely could be some of the same juice as Daniel Weller, just a little younger, just a little different proof. The Daniel Weller is proofed at 94. The Old Emmer Finest Wheat is 92 proof. And the cast strength is 119 proof. And I'll give you a little sample of both. I got it on ice tonight, so let's get into the first one. On the nose, it's, you know, nice honey, like honey graham crackers, or what's that cereal? Graham crackers is just honey, caramel, wheat, cookie. On the palate, so ice kind of waters down the normal one. But you get on the palate, you get oak, you get a little vanilla, very soft bourbon, very soft, if that's a good word. Now the cast strength, it is a great mouthfeel, a great nose. It is a tad hot, but again, these come in cast strengths $49.99. The other one's $44.99. You can do a lot worse than these. So I'm giving you a recommendation. If you like bourbon, if you want to try a sweet, soft bourbon, Total Wine, Old Emmer is the brand. I recommend the finest wheat. The normal one is like a tan label. The Old Emmer cast strength is a blue label. I still buy them both if I could. I have backup bottles. I got some in Florida. Also, as I was passing through Delaware to Philadelphia, I stopped in there and I got some, a backup bottle there because they had a ton on the shelf. Something I would look for if I'm in a state with Total Wine. As long as they have them, I want to make sure I have a backup. Good sipper, good everyday sipper if you're looking for that. Cheers. Let's get on to the wide receivers. I'm going to get just a regular Glencairn because I like this pour without ice. So give me 1 second. All right, I'm back. Let's pop this Old Emmer again. Sorry for the delay if you're here to talk about rookies and I'm sitting here talking about bourbon and drinking. Let's get some of that jazz music going. Let's get in the mood here. All right. Cheers to you. Hopefully you're having a great rookie draft season. You're getting all the content out there. Everyone's putting out all their opinions on the rookies. For those that don't know, I have a rookie wide receiver model. If you're interested in knowing more about that, join the Patreon, $1 a month. You can get in the Discord. We can talk. You can contact me anytime. Any questions, we can talk about it. That's Roto Lounge at Patreon. So let me tell you first my opinion. And I'm going to go ahead and, spoiler alert, tell you what I think about this class, what I would do in your fantasy rookie drafts. I would trade multiple picks to move up and get one of Marvin Harrison Jr., one of Malik Nabers, and one of Rome Odunze. And we'll talk about each individual one in this episode, and I'll make it quick. I won't keep you long. There's too many question marks. There's too many holes. There's too many red flags in all of these other profiles. The Brian Thomas Jr.'s, the A.D. Mitchell's, Xavier Worthy's, the Ladd McConkey's, the Troy Franklin's. There's just too many holes in these profiles to sit and take a chance on one of these when you could potentially try to trade up and get one of the elite stars. Like, these three are superstar type players in this draft. And it's kind of like when you buy a new car and they're like, do you want to upgrade to the electric windows or do you want to just keep the old school crank windows? And you're like, well, I'm going to save some money. I'm just going to go ahead and go with the crank windows, right? I don't even know if they make cars with the winding handles on the windows anymore, but you know, it's still a car. It's still going to get you from point A to point B. It's going to do the job. But after a while, you're going to be like, I am so frustrated that every time I need to roll my window down and it's hot, I got to crank this damn window down. I got to crank it back up. I wish I would have just invested the money in my electric windows. That's how I feel about these rookies. You should spend the extra money, upgrade to the electric windows in Marvin Harrison, Rome Odunze, and Malik Nabers. In a few years, you won't be frustrated that you settled on Brian Thomas Jr. or A.D. Mitchell or Ladd McConkey or Troy Franklin. And yeah, they may have gotten you a good game here or there, but they're frustrating you. They're frustrating you, and you're going to sit back and say, I wish I would have just upgraded. That's my suggestion for you. And I've already offered, in one of my leagues, I've offered my first three picks to move up into the top three. I'm number five, right? One of my dynasties, I had a rough year. I was middle of the pack. I offered the 1-5, the 2-3 that I got. No, I'm sorry. The 2-5 of mine and the 2-8 that I got in a trade last year to move up from five to the top three. Because I don't want to sit at number five. These three receivers to me are more valuable than Brock Bowers. But even in a one quarterback league, which this is, sitting at number five is probably the worst position that you could have. The three receivers are going to be gone. Brock Bowers is going to be gone. I'm going to be sitting there holding the bag like, what the hell do I do? My best point of attack is going to be, hopefully, someone's going to be in love with A.D. Mitchell or Brian Thomas Jr. or somebody, and I'll be able to get out of that top five pick. But I'm not going to want to sit there and spin that pick. That's like the worst absolute pick, in my opinion, in the draft. So I'm trying to move up. Damn with the depth. This class is not that good. I don't care about second round picks. I don't care about taking shots at the running backs or the next round of receivers. I want one of these studs. I want one of these elite guys, these difference makers. All three of them have a chance to be top five, top 10 wide receivers in the NFL. While you have the chance, package up picks and players, move up and get them. And I know you're like, Brad, it's a lot easier said than done. I know that. It's hard because I don't even think I'm going to get bites on my first three picks. I haven't yet. So I'll do some podcasts of some of the other guys that I like. I've run the guys through the model. The model doesn't like this class a lot. It does not like this class. It does not like your favorite players. I'm telling you that right now. And is the model 100% accurate? No. We've proven that, right? It loved Rashad Bateman and he got hurt. There's some players that I didn't love as much, but it hasn't really left someone out that turned out to be good. It's never left out a player. Like, it always had the Garrett Wilsons and the Chris Olaves. It always had those players, even if I didn't like them, it always had those players as good. It had Amon-Ra St. Brown. It had a lot of players that were good, but it's never really left out a player that was good. So that's what's concerning me. So if it leaves out your favorite player, I'm going to pass. I'm going to trade out. And we'll go through those in podcast. But today I'm here to talk about the top three, Marvin Harrison Jr. And then for me, it's another tier. It goes to Malik Nabers and Rome Odunze. You choose who you want out of those three. We'll talk about their data. We'll talk about their film. And we'll talk about their comps real quick. So let's drink some more of this Emmer Wheat. And let's get into the reviews. All All right, first up, let's talk about Marvin Harrison Jr. To me, Marvin Harrison is an elite prospect, the best wide receiver in this class. He's in a tier by himself. The wide receiver model has him as a top five wide receiver in this class, which that means he has a top five potential fantasy ceiling to hit a top 5 year at least once in his career. And watching him on film, I get the same vibes. Like, the film matches up to the data. The model, and we'll talk about the other two, the model doesn't like the other two as much as Marvin Harrison, and neither do I. So it lines up perfectly. So real quick, Marvin Harrison, he was born 8/11/2002. He was a four-star recruit out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He was ranked the 21st wide receiver out of high school. And again, for those that know, he's the son of Marvin Harrison Sr., the great wide receiver for the Indianapolis Colts. But he wasn't a high prospect. 21st wide receiver ranked in his class. And what we'll see is that neighbors in Ondunze were very similar. Rome was a four-star recruit, 22nd in his class. And Neighbors was a four-star recruit, 19th in his class. So these guys were all bunched up in similar areas of their draft class. And when you look at, you know, previous draft classes or previous high school ranks, there's not a lot of guys that were ranked in that area that turned out to be good. DK Metcalf, he was a four-star. He was the 19th ranked wide receiver in his class. Treylon Burks, who appears to be a bust, he was a four-star recruit, the 21st wide receiver in his class. I know Martavis Bryant was ranked around 22 in his class, didn't turn out to be a star. But these three have a chance to really set the bar for that high school ranking around that 19, 20, 21, 22 wide receiver in their class. And I think looking at high school evaluations and them coming into college is important. Now, you will see players that are ranked higher than them that don't pan out, but you'll also see wide receivers lower than them that will. You look at CeeDee Lamb. He was the 31st wide receiver in his class. Justin Jefferson was like the 300th ranked player in his class. So while it's not, you know, the total metric that you need, it's something to look at and just something to keep your eye on. I mean, we looked at Amon-Ra St. Brown, who was really high in his class. You know, you consider those things when setting up your draft board. Jermaine Burton, who I like, and we'll get in him later. The model likes him. He was like the 8th wide receiver in his class, so that's always a good thing to look at when you're trying to find some of those sleepers. All right, so let's talk about his 3 years in college, Marvin Harrison. We'll talk about his dominator rating. We'll talk about his breakout age and all that good stuff. At 19 years old, he was a freshman at Ohio State. He had 11 receptions, 139 yards, and 3 touchdowns. He was competing with Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson. Didn't have a really chance to see the field. When you look at other evaluators, they have a dominator rating, which is yards and touchdowns. But I like to do a dominator rating with receptions, yards, and touchdowns if necessary. Touchdowns are not sticky year over year. So you might have a player that has a great year with like 10 touchdowns. And then the next 2 years he plays, he might have 2 touchdowns or 3 touchdowns. So touchdowns are not really sticky. But if you find a receiver that is a big part of the offense, he's going to get a lot of receptions. He's going to get yards. Whether he scores or not, those come in bunches. Those will come over time. But I'm more interested in the receptions and the yards as a dominator rating. So that's what I really look for. And when you look at his freshman year, if you include receptions, he had a 4.39 dominator rating with touchdowns and out without receptions, because most evaluators you see just do yards and touchdowns. He had a 4.98. Now, when you talk about the dominator rating, what is a dominator rating? Basically, a dominator rating is how much of the market share that player has, right? So dominator rating is just a fancy word for market share. If you know, in this instance, he had almost 5% of Ohio State's receptions, yards, and touchdowns that season. So that's why a lot of people just do yards and touchdowns, because, you know, he had 5% of the yards and the touchdowns. You know, receptions, he still did okay, but it wasn't anything that was exciting. But then once you see his next year, That's when you start to see the breakout of Marvin Harrison Jr. He was 20 years old, 77 catches, 1,263 yards, 14 touchdowns. He had a dominator rating with receptions was 32.75. Without the receptions, it was a 34.20. So you're going to see a little higher dominator rating when you take out receptions because those are spread out throughout a lot of players. That includes running backs, that includes tight ends, that includes everybody. But if the receiver is a big part of the offense, it's going to matter. It's going to show that he's a big part of that offense. So to see that his dominator rating is close with receptions and without receptions just shows that he's still a big part of the offense regardless of everything else. As a junior, he was 21 years old. He had 67 receptions, 1,211 yards, and 14 touchdowns again. Back-to-back seasons with 14 touchdowns. One of those seasons was with C.J. Stroud. The other season was with Kyle McCord. So that just shows you he can perform with a stud quarterback and without a stud quarterback. And I believe Kyle McCord is transferring out of Ohio State. And I do also think that Marvin Harrison and Kyle McCord went to the same high school together. I don't know if that had anything to do with the recruiting process or if they really valued Kyle McCord. But I think that he's transferred out of Ohio State once Marvin Harrison Jr. is gone. But that year, with receptions, he had a 43.82. Without the receptions, he had a 49.86. So you see a slight uptick there, about 8 percentage points. When you take the receptions out, you just look at his 1,200 yards and 14 touchdowns. That was a big part of that offense. But those 67 receptions were also a big part of that offense. So we talked about that college dominator rating. And then you want to look at breakout age. Another thing that people are interested in the breakout age, and that is the year at which the player has at least 20% of the market share or a 20% dominator rating. So we're looking at Marvin Harrison, his age 20-year-old season. He had a 32% dominator rating or market share. So it's great. It's not a end-all, be-all metric. My model is actually like 35, 36 metrics. But dominator rating is one of those metrics that's important. Breakout age is no longer important for me because we've seen guys like the receiver that broke out at 17. He looked good in the model. He looked good in the model, had that great breakout, but it just doesn't translate. Yes, you want to see a younger breakout because it just means that at a younger age, they're dominating against younger players, and it's not like they're an old man dominating against younger players. So you do like to see a dominator rating or a breakout age around that 20-year-old, 21-year-old, but the younger doesn't always mean the better. So keep that in mind as well. So that's what I see as far as his data, okay? Let's get into his film. We'll talk about what I see on film, and then we'll talk about some of his comps. So the thing about Marvin Harrison Jr. is that on film, he is amazing. Now, he refused to run at the combine. He already knew that his draft stock was cemented as the top wide receiver in the class or the second. Watching him on film, I'd imagine he's anywhere from a 4.45, 4.47. I don't imagine he's any slower than that, or really any faster than that. And when you talk about one of his cons, really he has very few cons in his game. The elite speed would be one of them, right? You want to talk about Malik Nabers later, we'll talk about him. He has that elite speed. He has that His 40 times were different from 4.33 to 4.43, but he's around that 4.4 range. And he has that elite type speed, not track speed, but elite speed, elite quickness. Marvin Harrison doesn't have that. But what Marvin Harrison does have, he has the size. He's a big guy, 6'3". He has the athleticism of a smaller type wide receiver. He can make outrageous catches, has great body control. He doesn't always separate from his defensive back, but he has enough separation and enough body control, probably the best body control in the class, that he can make tough catches, has very strong hands, can catch, balls that are very difficult to catch. He can make those catches. He's got quickness on his releases. He's got quickness in and out of his breaks. He just has the knowledge and the feel for the game, that when he's on the field, he is one of the best players, if not the best player on the field when he steps on that field. When he laces those cleats up, he is one of the best, if not the best player on the field. And to me, I see a Larry Fitzgerald type player. A player that's going to come in, be a hard worker. As you can see, you know, he was a 21st ranked wide receiver in his class, worked his way up to be the number one wide receiver potentially drafted in his class. He's going to work. He's got the pedigree from his dad. He understands what it takes to be an NFL player. I think he's going to be elite. I have him as my number one wide receiver in his own tier. I would do whatever it takes to move up to get him. Well, I wouldn't say whatever it takes. I would be willing to pay a lot to move up and to get him. I wouldn't sell the farm on him, but I would love to have him on my team. Now, you talk about the studs now, the Jamar Chases, the Justin Jeffersons. You know, people are trading two number ones, three number one type for those type of players. Go ahead and try to get ahead of it early, you know. Go ahead and give two first now, because when he breaks out, it's going to cost three first. So give a 24 first, a 25 first, maybe throw in some mid-round picks. Mid-round picks in this draft don't mean anything. It's not a good tight end class. It's not a good running back class. After the top three wide receivers, it's a mediocre wide receiver class. There's no reason to hold your picks. Go ahead at this point in this year. I think it's better to get quality players over quantity players. Go ahead and go all in, push all your chips to the middle of the table and say, I'm all in on Marvin Harrison Jr., or I'm all in on Malik Nabers, or I'm all in on Roma Dunze. If you like any of the three, I can't knock you at all. They're all great players, in my opinion. I think they're all going to be great NFL players. I would much rather spend high and miss on one of these guys than to sit tight and use a pick on a guy like A.D. Mitchell or Brian Thomas Jr., or even trade up to get one of those guys and they don't pan out. There's a chance they will pan out, but everything that I've seen, I think that they could be flash in the pans, one hit wonders. There's red flags across the board on all of their reviews. So for me, Marvin Harrison Jr., when you look at his comps, his comp for me on the model, the high comp is Larry Fitzgerald, and we talked about that's what I see. The model comped him to Larry Fitzgerald, and his floor comp is Corey Davis. Similar type player, size, speed. Corey Davis went to Western Michigan. He was the third pick in the draft. Didn't work out, played a lot of years in the NFL, just didn't work out as that stud. So I think that if Marvin Harrison for some reason doesn't work out, he's going to have a Corey Davis type career where he's just kind of hit or miss in the league for, you know, six, eight years, whatever he was in the league for. Has some glimpses, just can't put it together. Now, I don't think that's going to happen, but I think Corey Davis could be his absolute floor if he doesn't make it in the NFL. All right, let's drink some more of this Immer Wheats. Let me go back and get some profiles for you without the ice. Yeah, very soft, very honey forward, graham crackers, honey grams, a little bit of caramel. On the palate, sweet, soft oak. If they put this in a Weller bottle, and let's say the color of the label was purple, and they called it Weller Immer, it would pass as a Buffalo Trace product. It is very good for $44.99. You can do a lot worse than $49.99. Cheers, let's get into Malik Nabers. All right, Malik Nabers. Now, when we talk about these three wide receivers, they're all similar. Malik is going to be a year younger than Rome and Marvin Harrison. He was born July 28, 2003. Like I mentioned earlier, he was a four-star recruit, 19th in his class. We talked about Harrison was 21, Adunze was 22. So they're all similar in that regard. Let's just go ahead and dive into his stats. As a freshman, he was 18 years old, 28 catches, 417 yards, 4 touchdowns. His dominator rating with receiving yards and touchdowns was a 14.79. Just the yards and touchdowns was a 15.6. As a sophomore, he was 19 years old. Started to see that impact, 72 receptions, 1,017 yards, and 3 touchdowns. This is kind of a red flag a little bit for me, but I'll explain in a minute. Receptions, yards, touchdowns, he had a 21% dominator rating. Just yards and touchdowns, he had a 20.5. Age 20, he was a junior. Last year, 2023, 89 receptions, 1,569 yards, and 14 touchdowns. Jaden Daniels was his quarterback. Brian Thomas Jr. was on the opposite side. The year before, Jaden Daniels was his quarterback. He had Kayshon Boutte on the other side. But you see that touchdown, that 3 touchdowns to 14, and that's why we talk about that touchdown isn't sticky, right? Harrison had 2 seasons, 14 touchdowns back-to-back. Neighbors had a 14-touchdown season and then 3. So it's hard to look at those. His dominator rating was around a 33 and 34 that last year when you include receptions. He was a big part of the offense, and that's well known. When you look at his dominator rating overall for his career, he had a 22.5 percentage of his team's receptions, a 26% of his team's yards, which gave him a total dominator rating for me, a 24.17. Now we're looking for elite type players around 26, and I think Harrison was over 26. I didn't mention Harrison. Actually, Harrison was 29.8 dominator rating for his career. So Malik is right under that threshold for elite, in my opinion. But a lot of people do have Malik Nabers as the top wide receiver in this class over Marvin Harrison. And I think part of that, or I know part of that, is based on his electric speed, his explosiveness, what he showed at the combine, what he's shown at the on the field. It's a much different receiver than Marvin Harrison. Marvin Harrison and Adunze are your typical X wide receivers. They're going to line up on the outside. They're going to go against the best cornerback on the other team. And most times they're probably going to dominate. They're going to win those matchups. Malik Nabers is someone that's going to be able to move into the slot. He's not typically that alpha X guy, but he can play that role. They'll move him into the slot. They can use his versatility. They can use him like Tyreek Hill, go in motion, like Odell Beckham, send him in motion, use that speed, have him go upfield at the snap of the ball, get that extra step on that defensive back, create separation, and use that electricity to really be able to create mismatches at the next level. So you hear a lot of the experts talk about these receivers, and it boils down to what are the team needs. What type of receiver are you looking for? Are you looking for that big possession type receiver like the Marvin Harrison or the Rome Odunze? Or are you looking for that explosive playmaker that you can move around in the slot and create all types of mismatches that would be ideal in a Kyle Shanahan San Francisco type offense? That would be explosive in Mike McDaniel Miami Dolphins type offense. Those are the type of offense that would really use that speed more than if you look at, perhaps like a Buffalo Bills who's looking for an X receiver, or maybe Kansas City Chiefs who need, an X receiver, or like Mike Williams was with the Chargers. You need that X receiver, that alpha that can line up on the outside, make contested catches, beat his defensive back to the point of the ball, and make those big plays. So it's all on what you need. But when you look on film, Malik Nabers, I mean, the one thing that jumps off is his speed, right? He's got that elite speed. The defensive backs are scared of that speed. They give him a lot of cushion because he can beat them deep, but he also sells that deep route, can come to a stop very sudden, which creates a lot of separation and a lot of room for the quarterback to get the ball to him. When he goes in the slot, he's almost uncoverable in college. And he's going to be able to be a huge mismatches at the NFL level. He can make tough catches, great yards after the catch. One thing that, maybe Rome and maybe Marvin aren't as good at is that yards after the catch. And it comes down to that elite speed. And he, he's a good yak receiver. He can get yards after the catch. He can fight for first downs. He can make people miss. He can play. Now, some things that I saw myself, when I was watching this film, Sometimes he wasn't aware of where he was on the field, so there was completed passes that he could have had, but he wasn't aware where the sidelines were, so, you know, he stepped out of bounds and created incomplete passes. So that is a concern of mine that I saw. Some of his balance in and out of breaks isn't elite, and maybe not even average. Sometimes on film he looks below average on you know, keeping his body under control before he has the ball, and I don't know how much that's going to affect him at the NFL level. His footwork is not consistent. He'll have some great routes, then he'll have some sloppy routes, but again, he can make up for that with his speed. Again, there's not a lot of cons on him, you know, some inconsistency in his hands a little bit. But you know, there's not a lot of cons when it comes to him. The one con that you can talk about is when he was in college in New Orleans, he was arrested for having a gun. So he was illegally carrying a gun. And you know, they dropped the charges. The Louisiana police dropped the charges. But you gotta wonder, I mean, carrying a gun, I mean, what's that gonna mean in the NFL? Is he gonna be one of those players that, you know, gets caught up with the weapons and that's important to him? I don't know. That was kind of kept on the down low. A lot of people didn't talk about that, but it is online. You can find the fact that he was arrested for illegally carrying a gun. He did turn the gun in. They dropped the charges. But why, you know, did he have it for protection? You know, that just some red flags there when you talk about young players with guns, because we've seen how that can unravel really quickly. So that would be a concern of mine. If that is concern of yours, it might not be a concern of yours, but it is a concern of mine, just a tad. I mean, it's not going to really deter my, you know, decision to draft him or not, but right now he's below Harrison, so there is a good chance that maybe, if it was between him and Rome Odunze, maybe I would take Rome. And we'll talk about Rome, and Rome seems to have a big chip on his shoulder, and you know, he's got that dog in him. And I do like that piece, you know, and we'll talk about that when we get there. So talking about the comps for Malik Nabers, I think his high comp for me is a Ja'Marr Chase type player. And his low comp is a Mike Wallace type player. Still a very good player. Has that speed to get deep. Reverses, things like that. Was a good intermediate route runner. But if Malik Nabers doesn't pan out, I think he'll have a Mike Wallace type career. And that's not the end of the world. I mean, that's still a decent pick. I think Mike Wallace had some top 12 or 24 seasons in his range of outcomes, but I don't think he ever hit that top five. And right now the model predicts Malik Nabers and Rome Odunze to be top 12. So Marvin Harrison was at top five according to the model. Malik and Rome are top 12. So I have them in the same bucket, and you can choose who you prefer. And we're about to get into Rome Odunze. Before I do that, I'm going to polish this old Emmer Finest at 92 proof, and I'm going to get into the big boy, the heavy boy, the 119 proof. Let you know what I think about that. All right. I'll be right back and we'll talk about Rome. Cheers. All right. We're back, and I have my old Emmer cast strength, 59.5 proof. Championships. Let's pour a little bit of that. And if you don't like bourbon, I apologize, but I love to do bourbon and fantasy football, have some jazz music in the background. That's what we love to do. So hopefully I'm not boring you too much. Let me give you the flavor profiles of this, and then we'll get into Rome Odunze's profile. On the nose, really good nose. I love this nose. I get some of the similar stuff, the honey, but I get more of like an oak profile. You get some of that dark, charred oak in the nose. A little bit of alcohol astringency, just a tad. Nothing to really off-put you. This isn't as good as when I first cracked it. Now, I can tell you now, I probably have just a quarter of this bottle left. When I first cracked it, very concentrated nose, very, very powerful nose. Loved it. Thinning out quite a bit now that I'm at a quarter left. Still a good nose. Still a good nose. Can't complain about the nose. All right, in for the palate. So I will tell you, this is completely different. This is a very, very viscous mouthfeel, very thick, very coating. I absolutely love it. Like, this is the type of mouthfeel you want in a bourbon, but it quickly turns hot. It quickly turns hot, gives you a nice Kentucky hug. I think part of that is its youthfulness. I think these are only like 4 years old, 5 years old. So these are only half the age of the Daniel Weller. But again, this goes back to the conspiracy theory. It's like, what is Total Wine doing aging Emmer wheat for 4 or 5 years? Like, what are they even doing? So somebody in Kentucky was aging these old Emmer wheats. And I believe it could possibly have been Buffalo Trace, and they just sold off a bunch of their stocks, you know, because a lot of these big companies, you know, these grocery chains and these producers, they sell off a lot of their stock and put it in, you know, some of the dollar store bags or some of these unknown name brand type things, but it's still the product that you know, Ruffles is being sold as the dollar store potato chips. They're still making their money, but they're just making so much of it, they're trying to find other avenues to sell it, right? So there's a good chance. I mean, I could be wrong, but it is distilled in Kentucky. It is a good bourbon. On this palate, they're very similar. This one is just hot. You get some of the youthfulness, but I love the mouthfeel. This is a much better bourbon on ice than it is sipping for me. I don't have any ice left, or I would put it on ice, but the 92 proof, I can easily sip straight. That, you know, I think Buffalo Trace is 94 proof, right? 86, somewhere. Elijah Craig's 94 proof. I think Buffalo Trace is like 86 proof or something like that. I could be wrong, but that Emmer is more of a sipper. This right here is, this would be good on ice, but it's really good. So let's get into Roma Dunze, shall we? Let's finish this podcast up. Cheers. All right, so Rome was born on 6/3/2002. It's at June 3rd, 2002. He was a 4-star recruit, the 22nd wide receiver in his class. We talked about that. So when you look at his freshman year, he was 19 years old. Didn't do a whole lot. 6 catches, 72 yards, 0 touchdowns. Did not have a very good dominator rating, similar to Marvin Harrison Jr. 5.66 dominator rating when you include receptions, 4.0 when you include just yards and touchdowns, because that zero touchdown really drags him down a little bit. He wasn't competing with the, you know, Garrett Wilsons and the Chris Olaves, but you know, they also didn't have a quarterback at that time. They didn't have Michael Penix Jr. You know, I think they had some no-name guy in there, and you know, that can affect the college scheme. But you start looking at as he progressed and as he got better, his 20-year-old, his sophomore season at 20, he had 41 catches, 415 yards, 4 touchdowns. That gave him a 25.48 dominator rating with receptions, a 26.92 without. His junior year, he had 75 catches, 1,145 yards, and 7 touchdowns. That gave him a dominator rating of 25.02 with receptions, a 25.74 without. And then as a senior, he really broke out, 92 catches, 1,640 yards, and 13 touchdowns. So the touchdowns wasn't huge, like a huge discrepancy. Like Malik Dabers went from 3 to 14. He went from 7 to 13, and then the year before that was 4. So he had some gradual increases. Just wasn't like a one huge hit And then he dropped back down to three. But his Dominator rating with receptions was a 30.6, which is amazing. When you take away those receptions, he was a 22.56. Now, when you look at his career, and it's important that we look at, you know, yards, receptions, all that good stuff, how well he did in that offense. He had a 20% Dominator rating of his team's receptions and a 21.5 of his team's yards, which gave him a Dominator rating of about 20.78, slightly lower than Malik Nabers, 10 percentage points lower than Marvin Harrison Jr. But it's not the end of the world. Like, we don't compare these three metrics to say who's better. This is just a small piece of the puzzle. But he had over 20%, and really, you want to make sure you have over 20%. Below 20% is really where you start looking at guys who may be overhyped, and they don't produce. But having a 20% market share of his team's offense, it shows that, you know, he was a big part of that offense. So when you look at his film, to me, and I've been noticing this for a long time, he is probably the best elite. He will be one of the best in the NFL of tracking the ball in the air. I mean, he absolutely can track the ball in the air, absolutely elite, can find the ball. And he has what I guess what they call like late hands or slow hands. And where Davante Adams is tremendous at this, he'll see the ball coming, but he's not going to tip off the defensive back. He'll wait until the last minute, and then he'll put his hands up to catch the ball. Because a lot of defensive backs, and they talk about it, I'm sure you've heard it before, they watch the wide receiver's eyes. Whenever the wide receiver, typically when you throw the ball to a player and that player is about to catch the ball, their eyes get really big because they're anticipating the ball getting closer to them. Their eyes get really big. They start to prepare to catch the football. When you're really, really, really comfortable at catching the football, you don't let that affect you. So when the ball's in the air, you're just preparing for that last second to catch the football. Davante Adams is an absolute savant when he does this. You can watch the film on him. He will wait till the absolute last minute when he's close, when he's being covered close. The last minute, he will put his hands up and catch the ball. The defensive back waves his arm. The ball's already past them. So you can see that the DBs are watching those receivers. As soon as they make any type of movement in their eyes, they're bringing their hands up to try to block the ball. The best of the best know how to defend that. And Roma Dunze already can do that. He already has those late hands, slow hands, however you want to call that. He will wait to the last second. When the ball's there, he will then react and catch the ball. And the defensive backs, it's already too late. There's a lot of times where Adunze, the defensive back, is close to him, and because he's so talented like that, he can make that catch. So that's kind of like a con as well. He doesn't have that great separation, but when they are close to him, he has that elite skill where he can overcome that. And that in itself, while not separation, is an elite trait. He is an absolute alpha X wide receiver, and I wanted to talk about, he has this chip on his shoulder at the combine. He wanted to perform at the combine. When he was doing the three cone, he wanted to have the best three cone at the history of the combine, so he stayed after it, and he kept running it and kept running it, but he kept kicking one of the cones, so he couldn't break that record. So eventually he stopped. But just the thought of him saying, you know what, I want to be the best. I want to be the best. I want to have the best three cone in the history of the combine. It just shows you that he has that drive and that desire to be good. And you want to have that in a prospect that you have on your fantasy team, right? You want to have someone who wants to be the best. Typical wide receiver one, alpha type player. You know, there's some questions, oh, he's from Washington, you know, maybe they played some bad defenses, but I don't really think that's the case for him. He just showed so many good traits on film that even if it was against bad defenses, it should translate against good defenses. He's excellent at the fade route. He really can win at like all areas of the field. Doesn't have elite speed, but he has a 4.45. I think he had a 39-inch vert. He's very explosive, a very good route runner. I think that Michael Penix may have been a product of how well Adunze was, because, you know, on film, there's a lot of times where Penix would just throw it up and Adunze would go get it or make the catch even if he was covered. Just great tracking. I can't tell you enough what a great ball tracker he is. If he gets, and again, we talked about what team needs what, right? Adunze will go to a team that has a quarterback that can throw the ball deep, and he will go get it. They don't need someone that's super fast like Malik Nabers that can run in the slot, do all these things. They need someone that can catch the ball when their quarterback throws it deep. And I think perfectly that would be Kyler Murray. I think Kyler Murray fits that profile where he would just throw the ball up and Adunze would go get it. And that's what Arizona would want, even though I think Marvin Harrison would be a better fit just because I think he's a better prospect. But Adunze is going to fit on certain teams where the quarterback will throw it up and he'll go get it. Like, I think he'll be really good on the Jets with Aaron Rodgers. You know, there's mocks him going to number 9 to Caleb Williams. I mean, I guess that would be good, but I think Caleb can do a lot of stuff. I think Caleb can win with any type of receiver. I think Caleb Williams is that good. But I think Adunze is really going to compliment someone like a Kirk Cousins. I think he would compliment a Kirk Cousins type player. But again, it goes down to what the NFL team needs, and that's where he'll get drafted. You talk about the cons. I mean, there's really not a lot of cons on really any of these three guys. And, you know, talk about like his yards after the catch is not great. You know, he doesn't create a lot of separation, but he creates that with his manipulation and his ball tracking skills. Sometimes his footwork can be inconsistent. You know, we see that a lot in college wide receivers, and they clean that up once they get to the pros. It took him a while to really become that stud, right? So you can say, well, he wasn't a stud his freshman or his sophomore year. It took him like till his junior and senior year to really develop. Was that a product of Washington? Was that a product of him? Now, he was a track star in high school, so he does have that track background. So he definitely is an athlete. So, you know, I can't say enough about these three receivers, and there's a lot of holes to shoot through a lot of the prospects in this class, but these three to me are wide receivers that you want to have on your dynasty teams. And these three players are players that you want to trade, and you're willing to be aggressive and go after these three players. Now, you can predict injuries, right? I will tell you, watching film, I would have Rashad Bateman just as good as these guys. Like, to me, Rashad Bateman is just as talented as these receivers. And I don't know if you've heard that from anybody, or it might sound crazy to you, but Rashad Bateman, to me, was an elite prospect. And it's unfortunate that he's, one, been on a team with a bad quarterback, but two, injuries have really derailed his career. But he was the type of player. He had the size, the speed, the on-field athletic ability. Like, he was such a good player. And just, you know, just a PSA, try to buy him low now in case he does go to another team with a good quarterback and he can get these injuries behind him and be a late round, or maybe even just kind of like a depth piece for you. Go get him cheap. But to me, when I look at some of these past draft classes, right, and I compare what I saw on film and compare it to what the model thinks, all right, last year, Marvin Mims was my guy. These guys are way better than Marvin Mims. I had Quentin Johnson high because the model liked him. These guys are way better than Quentin Johnson. These guys are way better than Jordan Addison. These guys are way better than Rashee Rice, right? Jackson Smith and Jigba would probably be, he would be after Marvin Harrison for me. Probably after Malik Nabers for me, but then he'd be right there with Rome. I think Jackson's going to be a star. I'm not worried about his, you know, his last year with Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf. I think Jackson's going to be a star in the NFL. He just needs to get his chance, and he'll get that. I think these guys are better than George Pickens. You know, I love George Pickens. These guys are better than George Pickens. Much better than George Pickens, in my opinion. Let's see. I would have Justin Jefferson higher than these guys. I liked him a lot. The model liked him a lot. His college resume was almost flawless. So while I know a lot of people didn't project his breakout, he did have a really good college data set. Way better than Treylon Burks at the model liked. Garrett Wilson is a good one. I think I would put Garrett Wilson probably. I would probably do Harrison, Malik Nabers. Malik and Garrett would probably be the same. And I think I would probably have Adunze after him. I wasn't a big fan of Olave, even though he's really done well. I would rather have all these three over Olave. Jamar Chase, you know, Jamar Chase was a really good prospect, and I recognize that, but I did try to look at some of his off-the-field issues. But if you disregard that, if you look at just their on-field, Jamar Chase would probably be, I think Jamar Chase and Marvin Harrison would be neck and neck for me. And then it would be Malik Nabers and Rome Odunze in their own tier, but I would put Harrison and Chase together. So that I think Harrison is in that realm of the Jamar Chase, the Justin Jefferson type player. You want to get him on your roster if you can. This is the cheapest you're going to be able to get him. The cheapest you're going to be able to get him right now is in rookie drafts, because once they perform, it's going to be impossible to get him. So I've done enough rambling, and it's been an hour. We've been talking about these rookie wide receivers. I appreciate you hanging with me, drinking some of this Emmer Wheat. It's good to be back. I'm going to break down a lot of other receivers leading up to the draft. We'll look at some running backs. We'll look at some quarterbacks. We'll break this off real quick. We got 2 weeks to do it. I'm going to hit the patrons up with some Speakeasy podcasts. I owe you guys a ton of that stuff. So look forward to that. I want to do one on draft capital. If you've been watching any of my Twitter, I've been going back and forth with everybody about this draft capital debate. And I'm going to talk to the patrons about how I feel about it. And don't let second round and third round draft capital deter you from loving a player, because you're going to have just as many misses in the first round. Adonai Mitchell, Brian Thomas Jr., as you're going to have hits in the second and third round, and we'll talk about that with the patrons, but I'll get that going here pretty soon. But 2 weeks till the draft, we're going to do the draft good. I'll have a follow-up podcast on landing spots, and we'll talk about what our rookie drafts look like. But right now, if you can, before the NFL draft happens, I'm telling you, move up, get in position, single quarterbacks, top three. Super flex, you probably want to be at least, top five? Because you're going to have Caleb, probably Jaden, probably Drake May, Marvin Harrison, right? So you want to be probably top six in super flex. So start making those moves to get in the top six super flex. I have all these receivers over Brock Bowers. It's not even close for me. I'm not going tight end over any of these receivers unless it's a tight end premium. But that's another conversation for another podcast. All right. For the Emmer Wheat Collection, the old cast strength, the Emmer Finest, this has been your boy Brad Starks. We're going to polish this, and we will talk to you soon. Till next time, this has been your boy Brad Starks. Cheers.